Pyramids and obelisks, sculptures and gravestones, all serve to focus our memories on a person or event from the past. We need memorials. They help us remember important things in our history. Today on the Bible Study Hour, Dr. James Boyce talks about memorials to the power of God, memorials we can see right now. Welcome to the Bible Study Hour, a radio and internet broadcast with Dr. James Boyce, preparing you to think and act biblically. We all go through discouraging times. Sometimes our troubles go on and on. Our problems don't get solved. That's when we need a reminder that our God is powerful and faithful to the end. Dr. Boyce teaches on memorials from Joshua chapter 4.
Alfred Lord Tennyson was the poet laureate of England in his lifetime, and on one occasion he had the duty that poet laureates have of writing a poem for a state occasion. The poem he wrote, and from which the title of this message comes, has in it the couplet, "Lord of hosts, be with us yet, lest we forget. I'm told that that was not well received by the government. It implied that England at the time might well forget God's blessings to her. And yet it was a good poem and an even better reminder. Lord of hosts, be with us yet, lest we forget. There is a great and tragic tendency on the part of human beings to forget the goodness of our God. Now we're looking at those chapters of Joshua that deal with the crossing of the Jordan River. Like all good stories, Joshua is written in episodes. There have been two already. Chapter 1 contains the commissioning of Joshua, his first commands to the people. The focus is on him. Chapter 2 concerns the sending of the spies into the promised land and their meeting with Rahab, Rahab's act of faith in protecting them and identifying with the people, and the focus of that chapter is on her. And then in chapter 3, we have the beginning of this new episode, which is the crossing of the river, the thing that the people have been waiting for, not merely for the 40 years of the desert wandering, but in a certain sense for half a millennium, because the promise of the land goes the whole way back to God's promise to Abraham when he first called him out of Ur of the Chaldees and said he was giving him a new land and described what land that was and the people that were living there, and that one day he was going to drive out the people of the land in order that Abraham's descendants might go in. The people had been waiting all that time, and now at last the moment had come. These three chapters of Joshua, chapters 3, chapter 4, and chapter 5, except for the last few verses, concern that episode. It has three parts. The first is the crossing of the river. The second is the erecting of a memorial to that crossing. And then the third is the consecration of the people, a new commissioning of themselves, the consecration of themselves to God before the actual conquest, the battles begin to take place. Now, we looked last time at chapter 3 at the crossing itself, and we saw that the most important element in that crossing is the emphasis found there upon the Ark of the Covenant. The Ark of the Covenant symbolized the presence of God. It's not been mentioned much up till now, not at all in the book of Joshua, but suddenly, in these chapters, in connection with the crossing of the river, it is mentioned many, many times. The ark is mentioned 9 times in chapter 3, 7 times in chapter 4, all of that explicitly. And then it's referred to an additional 4 or 5 times by the use of pronouns. So it's a very important thing. It symbolized the presence of God. And when the people crossed the river, as the story tells us they did so following the ark. In other words, God went before them. There wasn't any use crossing that river trying to bring about the conquest of the land unless God went first and delivered the land into their hands. That has an immediate and obvious parallel to our own lives. Sometimes like the people 38 years before this, we refuse to follow God's lead. God says, this is what you're to do, and we say, well, I don't want to. Or then again, as was also true on that occasion, God says, all right, then we are not going to go in that direction. We say, oh no, but we think we should. In each case, there's disaster. The only proper procedure is that of following God as He leads, and so the people were taught that. I pointed out also last week, as we looked at that third chapter, that it was not merely a case of God going before the people, but the presence of the ark was also intended to teach that it is the same God who goes before the people. That is the same God who brought them out of Egypt, the same God who had called Abraham out of Ur, the same God who had created the world and everything we know. The very fact that the miracle of the crossing of the Jordan was similar in so many respects to the miracle of the crossing of the Red Sea at the time of the Exodus is meant to teach that. This is the same God, same in power, same in holiness, same in justice, and same in mercy. And the ark, as we saw, was a great symbol of God's mercy. Now, after they had crossed, and indeed in conjunction with their crossing, the people were told by Joshua, who had been told by God, that they were to set up a memorial. Here's the way Joshua speaks of it in verse 4 and following. Go over before the ark of the Lord your God into the middle of the Jordan. Each of you, now he's referring to the 12 men that are representing the tribes, is to take up a stone on his shoulder according to the number of the tribes of the Israelites to serve as a sign among you. In the future, when your children ask you, what do these stones mean? Tell them that the flow of the Jordan was cut off before the ark of the covenant of the Lord. When it crossed the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. These stones are to be a memorial to the people of Israel forever. Now, I need to acknowledge that there's a bit of a technical problem at this point. Not so much in terms of what I've just read. It's perfectly evident from any reading of this chapter that the 12 men chosen by the people were to each lift up a stone from the Jordan and carry it up and place it upon the bank. These were then arranged into a memorial, and this was a mark of their camp at Gilgal, to which they often returned. There's no question about that. This technical difficulty that I refer to comes from the fact that in the original version of verse 9, the words which we have in the New International Version had been, that is, the introduction of the past tense, are missing. So the text literally says, Joshua set up 12 stones in the middle of the Jordan at the spot where the priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant had stood. This has led many commentators, indeed the vast majority of commentators, because that's the way the text has been translated in the older versions of the Bible, to suppose that there were two memorials. There was a memorial composed of stones that were taken out of the Jordan and set up upon the bank, and there was a second memorial of stones that were taken from the bank and set up in the middle of the Jordan. So that raises the question, was there one memorial or two? A great deal of very ingenious commentary has gone on around that subject as to why there should be two memorials and the way it's handled and so on. Let me say that it's perfectly possible that there were two. I suppose that is the literal reading of the text, and there's very good reason for taking it that way. And yet I must say that as I study this and think about it, it strikes me that the New International Version is right in its thinking, reflected in its translation, when it assumes that the past tense is just presupposed. This is not altogether uncommon in Hebrew writing, and if that is the case, then the text really should read something like the New International Version has it. Joshua set up 12 stones that had been in the middle of the Jordan at the spot where the priests had stood. I think there's several reasons for preferring that. For one thing, when you read the commands of God concerning this memorial, the commands are for one memorial, not two. Now, someone might argue at that point, well, Joshua might well have decided quite on his own to make another memorial. I've read that in some of the commentaries. That is possible, of course. But I think Joshua wasn't that kind of a man. Joshua was a soldier. He was used to carrying out orders, and the essence of Joshua's obedience was to carry out orders precisely. Indeed, that's the way God had talked to him originally. He had said that if he was to be blessed, he was to obey the law of the Lord and not depart from it, turning aside either to the right hand or to the left. And I think it was in Joshua's character to carry out exactly what God had said. And if God said, as he is recorded as having said in these chapters, set up a memorial of stones taken out of the Jordan, we can suppose that that's precisely what Joshua did. Secondly, there is a natural sequence here. If verse 9 is referring to the same memorial, and the sequence is this. Verse 8 tells us that the men who had been appointed by the Israelites picked up the stones, carried them up to the bank, and put them down. And then we're told in verse 9 what happened to them. We're told that Joshua, not the man who had carried the stones, but Joshua, arranged those stones into a memorial. And it's the memorial that is referred to when it says, and the stones are there to this day. I notice also, and I think this is perhaps also part of the picture, that at the very end of the chapter, when it begins to talk about the stones again, it doesn't refer even there to two sets of stones. It refers rather, verse 20, to the stones that were set up at Gilgal. So in my judgment, the New International Version is right in the way it renders this, and we're talking about one memorial. It was there in the Jewish camp at Gilgal, their base of operations during the years of the conquest, to which they frequently returned, and which were to bear testimony to the people of God's blessing as he led them across the Jordan. Now, there are three specific reasons given for the erection of this memorial. And that's to say, it pertains to three different groups of people. The first reason is that it was to be a memorial to the generation then living, the generation that had crossed the Jordan. You find that in the early statement of this, verse 6, namely, these stones are to serve as a sign among you. Now, we can readily understand that. Here were people who had witnessed a great miracle of God in dividing the waters of the Jordan in order that they might cross on dry ground, but who in the sequence of the years of fighting, in their attempts to drive out the Canaanites, and the battles spread out over a period of at least 7 years, would quite naturally tend on occasion, and perhaps on many occasions, to become discouraged, just as we become discouraged. Might be for a number of reasons. Occasionally there were defeats. That was true at Ai. We're going to come to that story. Perhaps it was simply the duration of the fighting. It's not so hard to have a spring campaign or a summer campaign, but to have the battle go on year after year after year, that in itself could be discouraging. Furthermore, as we read on in the book of Joshua, we find that there were strongholds of the Canaanites that they weren't able to overcome. It's a simple confession. There were places where they could not drive the enemy out, and so that might have been discouraging. Well, it was important in circumstances like that that the people who were doing the fighting be able to go back to Gilgal, their camp, and see those stones that were an evidence of the power of God as he had led them out of the desert into the land, that same God who had delivered them at the time of the Exodus and who, because he is the faithful God, would be with them to the end. You see, we need reminders like that. We go through discouraging times in our lives. We have battles that seem to go on and on, or problems that we can't seem to solve. And we need to be reminded that our God is that God. Our God is the faithful God, the powerful God. And if, for reasons known only to himself, certainly not to us, his strong right arm is delayed or held back in some particular circumstance of our life, it's not because he's weak or because he's changed, but because it pleases him to do that for his own purpose. And we need to know that. Then the second reason for this memorial, and the second group of people to whom it applies, is the generation or generations that would succeed the generation of fighters. Indeed, this is emphasized. It's referred to twice, once at the beginning of the chapter and once at the end. When your children ask you, what do these stones mean? You're to say, God stopped the flow of the Jordan, and these stones are a memorial to that fact. And again, you find it at the end. Joshua said to the Israelites, "In the future, when your descendants ask their fathers, 'What do these stones mean?' you tell them, 'Israel crossed the Jordan on dry ground, for the Lord your God dried up the Jordan before you until you had crossed over.'" Very important, you see, that we set up memorials in that way for the sake of our children. We ourselves are inclined to forget God's goodness. You know that if you look at your own heart. But if that's true of us, how much more true is it of a generation once removed, or a generation removed a generation beyond that, or a generation beyond that? It gets increasingly hard for human beings to remember the acts of God when time intervenes. And so we need memorials like this, so that when people say, "Well, what does that stand for?" we can say that is a memorial to the way God acted in the past. Church history is, in a certain sense, that for us today. When we talk about the great lights of church history, men like St. Augustine or Martin Luther or John Calvin or John Wesley or any of the other great figures of perhaps even our more recent past, and our children say, "Well, who were those men? You know, who was Martin Luther?" We're able to say, "Well, he was a man in whom God did a great work in Europe," and begin to describe a little bit what God did in the time of Martin Luther or John Calvin or John Wesley or whoever it may be. Generations need to be reminded of these things, and memorials are a chief way of reminding them. And then thirdly, toward the end of the chapter, there's a reference to the peoples of the earth. And here is a third reason for the memorial. Verse 24 says, "He did this," so not merely the Israelites. That was the chief frame of reference, but not merely the Israelites. "He did this so that all the peoples of the earth might know that the hand of the Lord is powerful, and so that you might always fear the Lord your God." See, memorials to the power of God are important for the world in which we live, because even though that world is not Christian and is in its unregenerate state and rebellion against our God, nevertheless, it's important for them to know that there is a God, and that the God of the Bible is the true God, and that He's a powerful God, and that He does intervene in history and the lives of His people. Now, I ask the question at this point, where does that leave us? The point I want to make is the one I have already been alluding to, namely that we all need memorials like this in our lives. The people of Israel needed their memorials, and we need our memorials, because we need to be reminded. And the reason we need to be reminded is that we are so prone to forget. I recall that even the Israelites needed other memorials than these that we've been mentioning. In 1 Samuel, the 7th chapter, verse 12, we're told of the prophet Samuel setting up a memorial which he called Ebenezer. It was the occasion of a great victory in which God had intervened in a supernatural way to defeat the Philistines. And they were driven out. It says that in the remainder of his lifetime, the Philistines didn't invade the territory of Israel ever again. And to mark that great victory, Samuel set up this stone which he called Ebenezer. And it means "The Lord helps." And he said, "We're naming it Ebenezer because hitherto hath the Lord helped us." What I want to suggest is that we need many Ebenezers in our lives, many things that we can look back on and say, "Well, here is a place where God intervened in my life and where He did something important, and to which I can look and be reminded of the character and presence and holiness and power of our God." I wonder if you have things like that in your lives. For some people, it's a place. People often, when they give their testimony, will refer to the place where they were when God first broke through with the light of His truth to them, and they can see that in their mind. I suppose there are times in their lives when they revisit the place where an experience like that happened, and they say, "Yes, here is where God spoke to me, where He brought me out of darkness into light, where He opened my eyes to see His truth." And that's very important. That's encouraging. That's the kind of place to which we can bring our children and say, "I was sitting right here," or "I was standing right here when God made Himself clear to me." My own mother has a place like that, and that place is near at hand. It was right here in one of the pews of 10th Presbyterian Church. Donald Gray Barnhouse, one of my predecessors, was preaching, and my mother is seldom in this church that she isn't reminded of the way God was gracious to her in those days. For some, it's like that. For others, it's perhaps a place of deliverance, and for that reason, this word Ebenezer is perhaps most important. You can remember that you were in difficult circumstances, and God did something to break through and solve the problem for you. It's important for you to hold that memorial up before your eyes and the eyes of your children and your children's children, because you know there are times in life when it seems that we need deliverance or we need a special intervention of God, and God for one reason or another doesn't intervene or doesn't speak specially. And we're inclined in times like that to say, well, maybe God is silent. Sometimes in great discouragement we're inclined to say, well, maybe God has forgotten. Even Martin Luther had circumstances like that. And yet you see, if you can go to a place and say, look, here is where God worked, this is what God did, then that memorial becomes important for you and it helps keep you on the track in the difficult times. Some people may say, especially if you're young in the Christian life, well, I don't have anything like that. At least I can't think of anything precisely like that now. If so, let me suggest that for people like you and for all of us, indeed, the Lord Jesus Christ himself gave two great memorials. We call them the sacraments. Baptism, the first, which is the memorial of our initiation into the Christian life. It doesn't save us, but it is that outward sign that testifies that we are, by God's grace, made a portion of Christ's body. And the Lord's Supper, where periodically and regularly throughout the Christian life, we gather together as Christ's people to partake of those elements that represent his shed blood and his broken body and reaffirm our discipleship and our desire to be obedient to him. I find that interesting that Jesus, whom we might suppose to be so above us in a spiritual way, that he might well have said, well, now, just be spiritual, just believe, just go on, have faith. In a certain sense, as it were, came down to our level and said, yes, that is what I want you to do, but I know you need help. And so I give you these great helps. Baptism, which if you look back to that as a sign of the fact that you have been incorporated into my body, saved from sin. And the Lord's Supper, regularly throughout your life, to remind you of my presence and my blessing. And yet, you know, I guess we can say there is a sense in which the memorials we have as Christians go even beyond that, because the same God who told these Jewish people who crossed the Jordan to take out the 12 stones and set them up on the bank is our God, and if that's true, well, then those stones are our stones, and the same God who told Samuel to set up that memorial, which he called Ebenezer, is our God, and if that's the case, then that stone is our stone. And we can look back to that memorial or any other memorial, and we can say, as Christians have all down through the ages, that God is our God. This God is our God. This is the one I want to serve. I don't know about you, but I need that kind of encouragement, and I'm glad God Almighty has provided it. May those memorials accomplish their purpose in us. May we be found faithful, and may we not forget the Lord of hosts. Let us pray. Father, give us grace not only to remember, but to act on the basis of what we remember, and to be found faithful, not merely for a moment or for a week or for a year, but to be found faithful to the very end of life for Jesus' sake. Amen.
You're listening to the Bible Study Hour with the Bible teaching of Dr. James Boyce, a listener-supported ministry of the Alliance of Confessing Evangelicals. The Alliance exists to promote a biblical understanding and worldview, Drawing upon the insight and wisdom of Reformed theologians from decades and even centuries gone by, we seek to provide Christian teaching that will equip believers to understand and meet the challenges and opportunities of our time and place. Alliance Broadcasting includes the Bible Study Hour with Dr. James Boyce, Every Last Word with Bible teacher Dr. Philip Ryken, and Dr. Barnhouse and the Bible, featuring Donald Barnhouse. For more information on the Alliance, including a free introductory package for first-time callers, or to make a contribution, please call toll-free 1-800-488-1888. Again, that's 1-800-488-1888. You can also write the Alliance at Box 2000, Philadelphia, PA 19103. Or you can visit us online at alliancenet.org. For Canadian gifts, mail those to 237 Rouge Hills Drive, Scarborough, Ontario, M1C2Y9. Ask for your free resource catalog featuring books, audio, commentaries, booklets, videos, and a wealth of other materials from outstanding Reformed teachers and theologians. Thank you again for your continued support and for listening to the Bible Study Hour.